back to the GamecockScoop.com podcast, the official podcast of GamecockScoop.com on Rivals. I'm Caleb, joined by Alan, as always. If you like the content or want to see more, don't forget to subscribe. The best thing you could do for us is subscribe on YouTube or whatever podcast app you're listening to. And you'll get updates anytime we go live, which is about once a week. Today we're going to talk mostly spring game, although there's some baseball to talk about, there's some recruiting to talk about, but this is our last, I guess, football on the field content for about 4 months, and I think that there's a lot to really break down from what we saw, with the caveat, of course, that the spring game is the spring game, and, you know, it's sometimes hard to fully know how much of an impact that one scrimmage essentially actually has. But before we get into the spring game, let's talk a little bit of recruiting on the basketball side of things. South Carolina lost Josh Gray to the portal, but yes, then immediately picked up Jordan Butler from Missouri. Butler was down to Missouri and South Carolina right at the end of his high school recruitment, spent his freshman year in Missouri. Didn't have the best season, although I think he fits Paris's scheme a little better than he did out there. And yeah, I mean, you just got to hope that he develops. I mean, it's hard to say that you'd rather have him than Gray right now, because I just think Gray kind of had reached a point that you hope Butler reaches. But nonetheless, you kind of fill that role. I think you still have two scholarships available now with Butler there. I think you still probably try to find a more experienced big man and a guard. Exactly. We have a list of who that might be on the Insiders Forum on GamecockScoop.com. There's someone visiting tomorrow. And what was his name? Brinkus, visiting tomorrow. And then there's a couple visitors this past weekend. So you can check all that out on GamecockScoop.com. On the football recruiting side of things, obviously there were a ton of visitors in for the spring game this weekend. Already got some pretty positive returns on all of that, including Shamari Earls, who committed right before the spring game, like about an hour before kickoff. That's the cornerback out of Virginia. And then Caleb Williams, who is a defensive lineman. He's played on the interior and exterior, on the inside and outside for his high school team. He had like 25 sacks last season, or 25 tackles for a loss and 14 sacks. It's something crazy. I can't remember the exact numbers. They're in the commitment article on GamecockScoop.com. But and also people have rightfully corrected me, because I said, I was talking about the DMV pipeline, but technically neither of them are from the DMV area of Virginia. So let's just say the DC, Maryland, Virginia.
Is that a thing? General. Like,
yeah, people care.
Doesn't DMV I'm showing my southern now, but is that not just DC, Maryland, Virginia completely, or is it only the parts of Maryland and Virginia that are near DC?
Yeah, I guess it's that. So it's like the suburban area surrounding DC that stretches into those two states. We don't have to call it the DMV anymore, whatever. Like, at this point, the obvious point is that Beamer and his staff have created inroads into the mid-Atlantic region of the United States. We're starting to just see them shut the door. Really, the Palmetto State in general has shut the door on the state of Virginia so far in the 2025 class. I know Clemson has signed a couple of the top five guys out of there too. South Carolina just signed two. They're on the short list for another one in Kendall Daniels, who was supposed to commit on Sunday and then didn't. So we'll see what happens there. He has a pretty extensive offer list, so I don't know. Maybe he's going to take his time a little bit more. I know he's got a couple more official visits on the books as well, but still haven't fully heard why he did not commit on Sunday one way or another. But obviously we'll keep you posted as we do. All right. That's recruiting notes. There's a bunch more coming out of the spring game. You had Zayden Walker back on campus. You had David Sanders.
That's the big one, yeah.
So a lot of big names that I think you made an impression on. Jared Smith, that's an edge rusher out of Alabama. But those are like some big boy recruiting battles that are going to take some time before those decisions are fully made. But I think, you know, good experience, good weekend, good recruiting weekend all around for 2025. Let's talk about the game itself. And I don't know, there's a bunch of different directions I think we can go. We can obviously talk quarterbacks. I thought the defensive front flashed. We saw a couple of new faces, be it transfers or younger guys, kind of make an impact there. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, I think you start where kind of everything started this spring and where, at least in my opinion, I think it's about ended, the quarterback battle.
Yeah, I suppose that is the if we're trying to
not bury the lead,
if we're trying to really emphasize our SEO, Lenora Sellers. So that is the question, right? Beamer seems to not want to say that the quarterback battle is over. But anyone that watched that game the other day, anyone that's kind of been keeping up with our coverage of spring ball, it seems like it's kind of over. I mean, even ESPN or SEC Network, whatever, kind of referred to him as the starting quarterback after the game, did a one-on-one interview with him after the game. It seems like it's a formality at this point. I don't know. What do you think?
I think I can understand Shane and Dowell and whoever else not wanting to name a quarterback. One, the portal's still open. It is for another week. So if you do that, Robbie Ashford could jump back in the portal when you're back to square one where you were in December looking for someone to push Lenoris. And two, I don't think it hurts to leave it open right now. It's April 23rd. You don't have to. I think we're 130 days away from the first game. You don't have to name a quarterback now. No one's making you. But also, yeah, I don't know how you watch that game and think Lenora Sellers could have done more. 9 for 11 passing, led the first unit on a touchdown drive to start the game. 2 first downs passing with his arm on third downs on that drive. 2 with his legs. That last one was a touchdown. Had a couple other nice plays. Like I said, only threw 2 incompletions. That's looks like a starting quarterback, or at least as much as one can in the spring football game. And I don't even think Robbie Ashford was bad. I thought he got the worst end of the offensive line stick in that game. He got sacked, I think, 3 times in the first half. There was one sequence he was doing the same thing as Lenoris, leading a drive down the field, got it into the red zone, actually, and then 2 straight plays, his offensive line kind of crumbles, and he gets sacked both times. But it's Lenoris's to lose. I think it's already Lenoris's in general, but I also don't think you really need to name a starting quarterback on April 23rd.
Yeah, to me, even in the play calling, I guess it seemed like they trusted mm-hmm. Lenoris a little bit more than Robbie Ashford. Robbie Ashford attempted, what, 1 pass? I mean, it was completed, but Mazio Bennett had to make a little bit of a acrobatic catch for it.
Maybe a couple other plays they wanted him to throw, and like I said, right. The protection broke down. Sure. But yeah, it was pretty clear where the first, I don't want to say first team play calling was, because it was all vanilla both ways, but where there was more aggression, I guess, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, and again, it's hard to kind of tell from a spring game. Like you said, the offense was very vanilla. They didn't really let him open it up down the field at all. A lot of it was behind the line or short game stuff. But actually, I thought it was kind of good to see him go, what was it, 9 for 11. Even with the short game stuff, because that was actually where my question was his accuracy. And some more short intermediate stuff. I already knew he could sling it, right? We saw that a couple of times last year when he did step in. So I think that was encouraging to see. And I don't know that you needed to see him throw a 60-yard pass down the field, although sure, that would have been exciting. But we've already seen that, right? We already know that he has that in his repertoire. You mentioned the offensive line. was the offensive line bad, or was the defensive line good? Because what the defensive line ended up with like 8 sacks, although they would have said that they had like 12. Yeah. I kind of agree with the sacks that were called or not called. early in the game there was a few that it seemed like they put like a hand on Lenoris or a hand on Robbie Ashford, and they're like, oh yeah, we got him sacked. It's like, those are 6'5", 230 pound fellows. So I don't know that you're bringing him down in that way
in a real game. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But yeah, what's your take? Cause I thought the defensive front looked really, really good, really disruptive the whole time. Couldn't get much going in the running game. But in a scrimmage scenario, obviously, like, whose fault is that?
I thought the two best individual players in the field, maybe if you want to take out Lenoris, the two best players in the field overall were both defensive ends, which I know we're going to talk about in a minute, but Brian Thomas Jr. and Dylan Stewart, in my opinion, were the two best players in the field. So you factor that in for sure. And then also, I think there is a real offensive line thing of, because they kind of did this draft style, and Beamer said the linemen were split up between the two teams. It wasn't necessarily their, you know, 1 through 5 on one team and 6 through 10 on the other. They didn't do first team versus second team. So I'm going to read you the lines, and I guess you tell me what you thought. This is where it was for most of the game. It was on one side, you had from left to right, Josiah Thompson, Kamar Bell, Vershawn Lee, Taurus Ellis-Simpkins III, and Cason Henry. And then on the other side, oh, I just had it open. It was Tree Babalade, Blake Franks, Ryan Brubaker, Trovon Baugh, and Aaron Parks. And I think we're both in agreement that your five best linemen are in there, but that's a mix of the two.
Like, yeah, I think the part that's inarguable, I guess, is just that you have more depth on the defensive line than you do on the offensive line. And I think that's where the discrepancy in this scrimmage came from, more than the offensive line is just as bad as last year. Now, I understand people wanting to, or not wanting to, but having that fear because of how hamstrung the offense was last year because of that issue. And, you know, it was kind of an ongoing issue all year last year. But I really do think that that's it. I think you probably have 6, 7, maybe 8 deep on the offensive line that you feel pretty good about, which is more than you could have said last August. but I think you're more like 12, 13 deep on the defensive line. And especially as the game wore on and you started having, you know, walk on offensive linemen in there versus Monkel Goodwin, who is, you know, maybe on the third level of defensive line right now, but that's a, you know, former 4-star that played at Alabama or was, you know, on the bench at Alabama or whatever. Nick Saban liked him. Yeah. DeAndre Jules is a 23-year-old graduate transfer that's got D1 experience at Pittsburgh. Yeah, but those guys were your late-game defensive linemen versus your late-game offensive linemen, which just don't have that level of depth. So I do think you have to just keep that in mind before being overly critical of the offensive line. But I understand the trauma from last season that have people a little afraid there.
Yeah, I think my one question, like, I actually think if you want to, like, maybe set it up that way, like, you feel pretty good about your left tackle with Tree. You like Vershawn Lee at center. He's got the experience there. Trovon Baugh played at right guard pretty much the whole season last year. Between Bell and Simpkins, you probably have a left guard, one of those two. I think your question right now is kind of right tackle if you wanted to be concerned somewhere, which you shouldn't. It's April. But Cason Henry's been hurt for 2 years. Aaron Parks was, you know, trying to block a really good defensive end group. But
Marky Anderson's still struggling to come back from injury.
Yeah, I think if you have to have an issue right now, it's probably that right tackle spot.
Yeah, and those names that we mentioned just now, I think all you see a path for them being ready. Josiah Thompson, maybe even if you can put on a little extra weight here over the summer. I think he has the footwork and mentality to start as a freshman, but still maybe that's not your most ideal situation. But still, I guess my point, even if that was the case, the line that you just laid out, and even if it is you starting a true freshman Josiah Thompson somewhere along that, I think you're in a much better position than you were last year.
Yeah, Tree and Tro alone having a year of experience each puts you in a better position than last year.
But yeah, I do think that it was a little frustrating to watch offensively. But on the flip side, pretty exciting to see Dylan Stewart out there, true freshman, doing his thing. He very much looked the part. Saw a variety of moves from him. You know, he already had a swim move. He was using his speed some, but I also saw him just straight bull rush through Sidney Fugar a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Competition noted there, I guess. But I feel like I always take a shot at him every show. I don't mean to. I'm sorry, Sidney. But
he did have a play too where he did kind of ragdoll Cason Henry for one of his sacks, or maybe one of his tackles for loss, but it was everybody. Nobody could really block Dylan on Saturday. Well,
and I think we knew he was going to make an impact as a pass rusher, even as a freshman, but something that was encouraging for me to see was the impact that he made in the run game, in the screen game. There was one hustle play where it was a behind the line throw to Larvidane, and he went all the way from his defensive end position, used that speed for how giant he is, and beat Larvidane to the sideline and tackled him for a loss. And then, of course, there was the almost like Jadeveon Clowney versus Michigan-esque sort of opening that he had against I can't remember which running back was unfortunate enough to take that handoff, but he was basically in the backfield as soon as the running back got it. And I was watching the replay on SEC Network, and the camera got a good shot of him just like looking up at the scoreboard at the replay of the hit that he had and just smiling at it. And, you know, he was pretty excited about that. I guess his one knock coming out of high school had nothing to do with his physical capability. It was just like, sometimes he took plays off, these sorts of things. If the motor that he showed in the spring game, he can carry into the season, I see no reason why he can't make a huge impact even as a freshman.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, we were texting about this a little bit Saturday after the game, but you kind of had the thing last year, not kind of the offensive line stuff that was more like injury necessitated, where like, okay, Pup Howard looks pretty good, but he's only playing like 10 snaps and, you know, Judge Collier's played pretty well, but he's only rotating in once every three series. And they kind of, even as the season started to get away, I think people were frustrated. And we talked about, all right, are the freshmen playing enough? Are they actually like getting these guys the development they need? I don't want to rank where Dylan Stewart is right now in this defensive end group, best, second best, third, whatever. I don't think there's a point in that. But clearly he's one of your best, I think, already. And I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice, assuming he progresses the way he should and has a good camp in August and everything like that. I think you're doing yourself a disservice if he's not playing significant snaps right off the jump.
No, I agree, but I also do think you saw some flashes from Kyle Kennard. That's the Georgia Tech.
Yep. Gilbert Edmond had a sack.
Gilbert Edmond, who is back. Both those guys are seniors now. The good thing is I think you've built enough depth that you have the luxury of not having him play 100% of snaps as a freshman, but I agree that he needs to be very much in the rotation you're not putting your best 11 on the field.
And we haven't even mentioned, name, but talked about Brian Thomas Jr., who Beamer said was second to DQ Smith in their coaching staff defensive player for the whole spring, not just the spring game. Seven tackles, had a sack. I think 2.5 sacks, actually. Seven tackles, like probably the best player on the field overall. I felt like he was in on every play.
Yeah, I know, I agree. And even I thought Desmond Umiozulu flash. You look on the interior, obviously you have Alex Huntley, Boogie Huntley, and Tonka Hemingway coming back, TJ Sanders coming back. But we just talked about Goodwine and DeAndre Jules, I thought looked pretty good. So to me, this is the deepest front four, and really we can get into the linebackers here too, front six that South Carolina has had in the Shane Beamer era. And to me, that has me really excited about the defense. And again, it's a scrimmage, so you're like, well, but what does that say about the offense? I genuinely think that you can say that this defense is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We talked about this so many times. Big believer that it just kind of starts at the tip of the sword, and they didn't have – it got better as the year went on, but for most of the year last year, you didn't have a pass rush. You didn't have guys you felt like could get out to the quarterback. And that just kind of helps everything behind you. I think you feel better about your secondary when you're rushing the passer like this. I think you feel better about your linebackers. I mean, I'm trying to think what other, like, notes I have secondary-wise. Vakari Swain Interception, and I think he had one other tackle for loss in the fourth quarter. He looked good. You still got that kind of open battle at corner opposite O'Donnell Fortune, whether that's him, Judge Collier, whatever else. Sabari Sandy's out now, so there's going to be some more reps for somebody, at least in practice.
I feel like you're underselling it by just calling it an interception. It was a pretty athletic
play. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. It was. I should have.
Yeah,
he fourth down play too. Like he.
Yeah, he went up one-handed, tipped it to himself, came down with it. And that's the thing. He was being recruited out of high school as an athlete, could have gone and played offense somewhere. His ceiling is probably a little bit higher on defense, but we did see him in there for a trick play on offense where he was
– forgot about that. Yeah, that didn't look great.
No, yeah. What was it?
Gerald Kilgore, yeah.
Gerald Kilgore, who actually did play quarterback for a while, but had a rough throw where Swain was open in the back of the end zone, but wasn't ever really that close. And then we did see him. I mean, obviously, they didn't do any live returns, but back there for punt return some. Yeah. So it won't surprise me to see Swain end up with the ball in his hands some. And that's something that we can talk about here too with the receivers, but if he ends up beating everyone out for that other corner position, you know, maybe they just lean in on that and let him return a couple kicks here and there. What did you think of the wide receiver performance? I think, like we've already said, the offense was pretty vanilla, but I don't know that anyone super flashed. Mazio Bennett did some nice things, freshman. Gage Larvidane, who we heard throughout the spring was having a nice spring, had a couple of catches, but there was nothing that was overly memorable, I suppose, from that wide receiver group for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think too. You didn't see much of Jared Brown. I think that's very much a, not consequence, but a result of the offense being vanilla, because I think they want to use him a lot of different ways more when the season gets here. That's the Coastal Carolina transfer. Amari Huggins-Bruce, I think he had one play where he kind of popped, like broke a tackle, showed a little bit burst.
Tyshawn Russell actually.
That's true. The first drive from Sellers.
Yeah, he looked pretty nice, and we know that they have a little bit of a connection because they played a lot of second team practice last year together.
And he caught a touchdown from Sellers last year. That Furman game, wasn't that him?
Yeah, that was the deep ball. So, and then I thought Russell in general flashed as a freshman, but then he had a couple of drops near the back half of the season that I think they stopped going to him as much after that. But you know, if he's gotten that under control, then I could see him taking a big step forward this year too.
Yeah, I think the receiver thing at this point is we've had this discussion. I feel like you have a lot of you feel like you have the guys. You don't know if you have the guy or who the guy is, and that's for summer and camp and everything to figure out. But I feel like some of the parts you probably feel okay about what you have there.
And is it possible that you don't necessarily need the guy, right? You know that, or you think that the run game is going to be a strength for you once Rocket Sanders is back. You know that you have two tight ends that can factor into the passing game pretty well, and Brady Hunt and Joshua Simon.
Yeah.
Brady Hunt flashed a little bit, I guess, on offense during the spring game as well. And then you do have all these guys that are kind of tacticians, can find open space, you know, obviously Norris Sellers is dangerous with his legs, as he showed a couple times in that game. So obviously it'd be nice to have this alpha dude that, you know, Xavier Legat sort of guy that you had last year. But I don't know if it's a necessity or not for this offense to still score enough points.
Yeah, I think that's just the by committee approach. And like you said, I think the whole, we were texting about this Saturday too, but it's so hard to even make an offensive judgment when, is it fair to call Rocket the most talented player on the offense? I think it is, with the SEC track record, what he did at Arkansas when he was healthy.
At least the most talented known.
The most talented known commodity on your offense didn't play in the spring game.
Yeah.
Or maybe the most proven, what you should say is, I think this is just an entirely different look. Running game, you know, I think obviously you can throw it out of Rocket in the backfield, just kind of opening everything else up. I think it just looks different when he's healthy, and He said he's on track, or Shane Beamer said on his Carolina calls before the spring game, he's on track for football activities in June, which is what you want to hear, but you still got to obviously progress to that. And hopefully if you're South Carolina, he's ready to go by the time camp gets here in August.
Yeah. Speaking of talent that wasn't out there, Nicholas Harbor obviously didn't participate in the spring game. I believe he had a track meet earlier that day.
Best time in program history for the 100 meter.
Yeah, so he's having a great track season as a freshman. I think I just saw he was named SEC co-freshman of the week. Yep. For track and field. But the question still will be how much development has he shown as a wide receiver, as a pass catcher, using that big frame, as we've talked about, to high point the ball, all those sorts of things that we didn't necessarily see a ton of as a freshman. But there's no doubt that he's got all the physical tools there. So it'll be interesting to see how he puts that together, has a strong summer, what he looks like in the fall as well.
Yeah, it'd be huge for him. I think it'd be cool for this program. But if he ends up, even as an alternate, going to the Olympics, that's going to take him out of the first 2 weeks of camp too, which I don't think anybody's telling him to not go to the freaking Olympics to do 2 weeks of fall camp. But still, it, when you're having that particular discussion, it could factor in.
Right, and they did know that going in
to
his recruitment that was a possibility, but it's just difficult because it's a position of need, right? If this was, insert position that is, if he was playing tight end right now or defensive end right now, I maybe it wouldn't matter as much. I guess that brings us to our next point. What did you see or what did you not see in the spring game that you think that South Carolina still needs to target here in this little spring portal period that's still open right now?
Yeah, it's we already had the right tackle discussion. I think that's not the hardest position, but up there with the hardest ones to get, just because everybody's looking for offensive linemen in the portal, and if they're in the portal in the spring, there might be a reason for that. But another body there wouldn't hurt. I think, like you said, I agree. There's more depth defensive line than offensive line. Maybe a line, but like, I don't feel like the linebackers really popped at any point on Saturday. I thought it was more like the front three or front four, depending on what look they were in. But also, if you feel like maybe a linebacker, but I'm not really sure if that's a need per se.
I thought Demetrius Knight did some nice things on Saturday, but that also goes back to the vanilla play calling. I didn't see a whole lot of stunting or anything like that, so they wouldn't have made as big of an impact. And also, I think that's another credit to the defensive front that they were able to be so disruptive with just the base package. You know, I didn't see a ton of blitzing.
I guess my like Debo and Bam are proven at this program. Knight and Kamara, you're probably going to need at least one of those two to step up, just because, especially if you are in that 3-3-5, obviously you're going to need three out there on every play. I think we're all rooting for Mo Cobble just to like finally get healthy and be able to finish his career the right way. But I don't know if you can count on that off two ACL surgeries. Right. Wendell Gregory and Fred Johnson,
freshmen, both talented for sure.
But freshmen, like you say. So maybe another experienced linebacker, maybe someone who's played in a 3-3-5 could be a portal need, but again, I don't know if I call it a need, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now I think wide receiver is probably your number one on your list. If you can, but really again, only if you can find that alpha guy. I don't think you're going to bring in another possession receiver, cause I think you feel pretty good there. And then offensive line, just from a pure depth standpoint, what are they have like 15 scholarship offensive line right now. I think they'd probably rather have 17, 18, maybe.
15 right now.
But that's just a bodies thing. So it wouldn't surprise me if they bring in a couple there. But a tackle in particular is a hard position to find in the portal. Sure. Just edge is hard to find in the portal. I do think that, all right, true or false, I guess. This is Shane Beamer's most veteran depth laden team since he's been here. Not like they've been in the program in South Carolina program the whole time, but just upperclassmen that are going to make an impact.
Yeah, I think you kind of just run across the board, right? You take out the quarterback position, but Rocket's a senior, Bruce and Larva Dane are seniors, Your transfer's a receiver. Joshua Simon's a senior. You're going to be starting versus Sean Lee, probably at center, senior. Tonka and Boogie are seniors.
Torricelli. Nick.
Yep, yep. Emanuele and DQ are juniors, but they basically played almost immediately as true freshmen. This is a third year for them. O'Donnell Fortune's a senior. Debo Williams, obviously, fifth year. Yeah, I think that's probably, when you stack it up that way, probably fair.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of interested to see if that formula works. We saw it work for the basketball program this past year, bringing in a bunch of veteran guys and being able to figure out how to gel them together. Even though the individual parts maybe weren't that flashy, when they all came together, it worked really well. But that's, you know, five guys on a court versus 22, 30, if you count special teams and all that, that you need to make an impact. And I think that's a little bit more of a difficult ask, but I'm really interested to see how it all comes together.
Yeah, I think that's about right. You've got, I mean, you can sign players as long as they're in the portal, but you have one more week to enter the portal that closes a week from today. Right now, South Carolina is right on the scholarship limit on the dot at 85. So obviously, if they take anyone in, someone else would have to go out before August. And we'll see what happens over the next week in terms of entries, and obviously through May into the summer in terms of signing.
All right, one more true or false. True or false, the fan base's expectations of Lenora Sellers are too high.
True. I think he hasn't really had a bump yet. You saw him in three games last year. He played well in all three. He's played well in both of the spring games. No one's seen him struggle. I'm not saying he can't handle a struggle, he can't bounce back, anything like that, but when all fans have ever seen in public, they don't see his practices, I guess, and neither do we for that matter, but when all they've ever seen is him throwing bombs and running for touchdowns, yeah, I think you're going to think he got the next Cam Newton.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a redshirt freshman. He is going to face adversity at some point. I do think, according to Dowell Loggins and everything we've heard, I mean, even just like if you use your own eyes in some of his press conferences and stuff, he seems like an even-keeled person. Seems like he can handle it maybe mentally, a little bit of adversity, but we haven't seen it proven out. Yeah, I think he can be very, very good. But I think if you have the expectation for him to be this fully polished, you know, NFL ready quarterback, I don't know if you're going to see that in the
people have game. That. That's all they've seen so far.
Right. No. And that's to his credit. I think he has that upside. I think he has the upside. The sky is the limit as far as the ceiling goes. Is he going to be perfect as a redshirt freshman in the fall? No, obviously not.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way to leave it. I still think, just to kind of bookend the conversation, he is going to be your starting quarterback when they take the field against Old Dominion in August. And I would certainly imagine, again, if that's not going to go down in the last week of camp, I don't think they want to do it now, but I think sooner than later, Lenoris will be named the starting quarterback.
Yeah, I wonder. So we know that Beamer and his staff are having the one-on-one conversations this week with pretty much everyone on the team. I wonder what they're telling someone like Ashford, I guess. I also wonder what they told him when he came here, all that sort of stuff. I mean, I imagine, yeah, it's that he has the opportunity to compete for the starting job. If he's been watching the same stuff that we've all been watching, then
kind of on the wall there, I think.
Right. Right. So, but obviously South Carolina would love to have him as that backup option because he's got SEC veteran experience.
I think you need him. I don't even think it's a want.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the delicate balance. And I mean, that's the balance that we were talking about when they were looking for a quarterback in the portal. So yeah, it'll just be very interesting to see like how Ashford handles potentially being the second guy. And yeah, whether or not he's looking for a more straight line to a starting position, which I'm sure there are some opportunities out there.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. And I think I also, again, that comes back to what they told Ashford. We don't know exactly what they told Ashford before he got in. Cause I can't speak for you, but I think spring ball kind of went about the way I thought it would. Lenoris looked how I thought he would. Lenoris has separated himself like I thought he would. This looks about the way we all kind of thought it would when they were looking for a quarterback to push him, that it would still ultimately end up being Lenoris.
No, definitely. It just, I wonder if the guy that got recruited out of high school to Oregon has, you know, played in the Iron Bowl at Auburn, is willing to sit and kind of be there as that backup option, which, like you said, is very, it's an essential position on the team, but it would take a lot of, it would take a certain type of person to kind of swallow your pride and take that position, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, again, if that's what's happening, is 1 week left of the portal. And then we'll see. We didn't even mention Dante Reno yet. Had a pick, also had a touchdown.
Didn't
see a whole lot there. I mean, there was a couple flashes. I feel like we talked about that with a lot of players, but one half of vanilla offense against second, third team defense.
To me, and again, yeah, with all that in mind, he was a little more mobile, I guess, than I was expecting. He escaped the pocket pretty well, made some throws on the run. Like you said, made a bad decision. Was he the one that got picked off?
Yeah, that was the swing pick.
Which, I mean, that was an impressive play as well. But I think you feel good. You feel like you probably hit, but it's hard to really know. Yeah, you weren't expecting him to come and compete as a true freshman anyway, I don't think.
Yeah. And that just further underlines the point that you need a backup between Sellers and Reno, and you have one right now, and you got to hope you still have one when the portal closes.
Right. I mean, and obviously you still have Luke Doty out there too. It seems like he's trying to lean into the wide receiver role, but Beamer has emphasized throughout spring that he is still going to quarterback meetings and stuff. This is a big if, we don't know anything. If Ashford were to enter the portal, maybe he takes a little bit more of that backup spot, but who knows? Davis Bevel has also started at the Power 5 level, so it was hard to get much of a read on him at all because he's a little bit more stationary and he had probably the worst O-line group.
Yeah,
because he had the second team of the Garnet team, which was already struggling a little bit more.
Yep.
Anyway, I think that's enough spring ball for right now. We have a ton of thoughts already on GamecockScoop.com if you want to check that out. We'll continue, obviously, to look back at spring, look forward, look at way too early looks at the opponents, which I tend to start in May and run through the summer. So tons of really great football content coming up on GamecockScoop.com. Like I said, recruiting's really heating up. Let's talk a little bit of baseball before we get out of here. I thought actually that your article that you wrote on Monday, which people can find on GamecockScoop.com as well, it's the Arkansas weekend wrap or whatever it was posted yesterday, but I thought it summed it up really well where you took some quotes from Mark Kingston about being one play away, being on the 1 yard line, you know, all those sorts of things, which those quotes bothered me a little bit, and we can get into that in a second.
I wanted to get into that too,
that's kind of, I guess, the microcosm of what happened this weekend. You lose two games to Arkansas. You lose by a combined, four runs?
You had a really good opportunity.
You had a really good opportunity on Friday, but obviously you're facing one of the top, probably the top pitcher in the country. He struck you out 11 times. You can't get more than one run, even though you did have some of those opportunities. And then in the doubleheader, it just kind of got away from you. Your bullpen didn't come through for you after Askew set the table all right. I mean, he had one sort of tough inning with a couple of
your defense struggled a little bit there, a couple errors or one error, but yeah.
But yeah, so I guess give me your thoughts on how that series, because this is what you were talking about in your article, is a bit of a microcosm of the season at large. And then let's get into some of those Kingston quotes, because they definitely rubbed me the wrong way. But
yeah, I felt, you know, all three of those games, you at least felt like you had a chance to win them. Friday, yes, you are facing a guy who's going to get seven figures from a Major League Baseball team in a few months in the draft. I acknowledge that, but you knocked him out by the sixth inning. You were only down 2-1 when he left. Like, you were still in that game again. And admittedly, a very good Arkansas bullpen too. But second and first, nobody out in the seventh, you don't score. Two runners on base in the ninth, you don't score. You had the bases loaded in the fifth against Hagen Smith himself. You only pushed one run across. It just kind of felt like the year. And then you come back and win game one Saturday behind Eli Jones. Let's see, Eli Jones, Garrett Gainey, Matthew Becker, and Connor McCreary pitched, I believe, off the top of my head. Get some offense going in that game. Actually put up a four-run inning on Arkansas, which you've only got up one other one of those a whole SEC year. And then your defense lets you down in the last game. Lee Ellis with an error after Will Tippett got hurt earlier in the weekend. That ends up opening the door for three runs. Like you said, your bullpen gets away. You lose the series. Okay, you lost a series to number two team in the country. You're 9-9 in the league, four weekends to go. I still think 16 league wins in your hosting, so that's 7-5 down the stretch. Doable, yes. Another top five opponent this weekend in Kentucky. We're all just kind of saying things we've said for a while now. Big series, got to win it. They're still in striking distance for all the stuff they want to do, but they're not there. Which brings me to Mark post-game Saturday. I actually wasn't there. I went back and found this yesterday, or 2 days ago. This was during the spring game. Quote, we've played 21 games against quad one teams. I'm not going to give you a resume right now. It's not time for that. If we had played not one of the best schedules in the country, we could easily be 31-8 or whatever the record would be, easily. But we're being tested against the best of the best, and we want to be the best of the best. We're not where we want to be. We want to be the best team in the country, but we're pretty damn competitive when we play the best in the country, which means we're close. And then he had a second quote, which I didn't print the whole thing in the article, but he said he told the team that they're like a football team on the one-yard line, and they're just trying to push that ball over the goal line. You want to start with that? Because I don't have my thoughts on the story. If you're subscribed, you can check them out. But
I mean, he's not wrong. This is the part that's been a struggle to talk about this team all year, because there is this gut feeling that wants to bury them a little bit. For better or worse, maybe that's me letting my former fandom before I was a journalist or whatever creep in a little bit, and you know, seeing the Ray Tanner era and all that, and seeing how things have fallen a little bit. But to me, once you're talking about being three plays away or whatever the cliche is, you've kind of already lost me. Either you're winning those close games, you're coming through in close clutch moments, or you're not. And throughout the entire season, other than the Vanderbilt series, I'll give them some credit for that sweep there. Tough road win at Florida. Okay. It's like the kid in the honors class that like procrastinates on everything and then like pulls like a B minus, and you're like, okay, like that's good, I guess, but you just feel like there's so much more potential there, and they've never reached the height of that potential. And to me, maybe this is a little hot takey, to me, if your attitude is we're so close, and that's what, you know, he's saying within the locker room or whatever, then maybe that's why you have a B minus.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you just said there. I think you can kind of put this whole year into, you know, 2 1-run losses to Clemson, and a couple 1-run losses early in SEC play, and you had a 1-run game Friday. And man, the season's 3/4 over, regular season at least. Like, you're more than halfway through SEC play. Like, this might just be what it is. I don't necessarily buy that you're on the 1 yard line. Or if you are, as I wrote, it's 3rd and goal because you've already been stuffed twice. Like, you're kind of not moving. And
also, if this is like year two, fine.
Yeah, it's year 6 if you don't count COVID, 7 with COVID.
And I feel like every time it's kind of gone off the rails, which last season went pretty well, but every other year that it's kind of gone off the rails, you've heard a lot of the same excuses, the injuries, the like whatever. At some point that gets old.
I wanted to get to that too, though. Like, to me, the worst part of the whole quote is the schedule comment. Yeah, it's tough. You got a bit of a bad break that your crossovers, you don't play everyone in the SEC West. Two of your crossovers were Arkansas and A&M this year. It's the luck of the draw. That's tough. That's two of the top teams in the country. Your other two are Alabama and Ole Miss, who are combined 9-21 against everybody else in the league, and they both took series off you.
Yep.
It's the SEC. The schedule's tough. I don't know what to tell you. Like,
yeah. Well, and that is the thing. So you said they have to go 7-5 down the stretch. After this Kentucky series, things do seem to get a little bit easier, but But while they have proven that they can play with the top five teams in the country, or whatever it was that Kingston said, they've also proven that they can lose to pretty much anyone too. So how much confidence do you really have, even as the schedule gets a little easier, that they're going to shut the door well enough to end up hosting?
Maybe. I can't say I'm confident. I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's felt like a 50-50 season. I mean, we've gotten on here and had the same conversation almost every single week. So sorry if you're getting tired of it. I don't know what other take to have. It feels like we're flipping a coin every single weekend.
I'll drop a take. Win the series this weekend. Kentucky's good. Yeah. Kentucky's, I think they're ranked 4 or 5 right now. They've gotten off to a great start. They're not infallible. They lost a series last weekend at home to Tennessee, who's also really good, but still, they're coming to your building. They're good, but they're not Arkansas. They're not A&M. Take a series. Take a series up top five team. Show that you're actually close, that maybe you are on the 1 yard line. And then you can take some momentum into Missouri, into Georgia, into weekends. You feel like you have a better chance. And maybe you can stack some series wins, but take a series this weekend. Like, I don't need to hear that Kentucky's really good and that they're also really good. It's a one swing game.
Yeah. I mean, but I guess take a series. I guess to put it another way, right? Like, South Carolina football has never, it had a moment under Spurrier or whatever, but it's never reached consistent heights. It doesn't have national championship banners, doesn't have SEC championship banners. So when you say, oh, this schedule is really hard, well, yeah, you're in the middle, depends on the season. Sometimes you're in the middle, sometimes you're in the lower half of the SEC. So playing those top teams every year, that's pretty brutal. South Carolina baseball is not supposed to be mediocre. That's like Alabama.
Other teams said our schedule was tough.
Exactly. So if I'm thinking back to football, right, that's like the new coach at Alabama, which we could see this year, but it's Alabama. New coach at Alabama being like, well, we're in the SEC. It's really hard. It's like, yeah, but you're supposed to dominate the SEC. You're supposed to be one of those top flight programs. And for the longest time, this baseball program has been that. And are we ready to just be mediocre? I don't know. Are you ready to say, to not include yourself in that upper echelon whenever you're talking about how tough the schedule is?
I think that is a larger existential question that isn't necessarily for April when there's still 4 series left. I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I think that's ultimately, if the season ends the way it's progressing through 75%, going to be the cross that Ray Tanner and the Boosters have to bear at the end of this year.
Yeah.
That's not a conversation for right now. We might get on here next week after they take a series off Kentucky and they're back over 500 and they're going to feel better about everything. It's kind of the kind of thing it feels like they would do. But from a 30,000 foot level, I think you're right. I think that's just kind of where it is right now. And I don't think anybody wants to hear about the schedule being tough, not just in South Carolina. I think in most places.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I think this team is a top 25 quality team.
I do too.
I think they still, they're almost certainly going to make the tournament. They still have a pretty good chance of hosting. I think that's what makes it so hard because you feel like I feel like I'm taking crazy pills a little bit. I realize objectively their record does not justify me being as hard on them as I am. But I've watched a lot of the games this year. I know the fan base has. And at some point, I think you just got to trust your eyes.
That's kind of I think that's a very good way to put it. The eye test just feels worse than the record right now. I've actually got some numbers if you're subscribed. I'm going to try to write it later this week about some of the runners in scoring position stuff, the runners on base stuff that I was looking at. It's bad. Like it's the numbers when you actually grade it out and do match your eye test with some of this team's struggles. And again, it's not too late. There's a month to go. You've got 12 SEC games and 3 big ones in your ballpark this weekend. But it's not early anymore. We're, like I said, about 3/4 of the way through this thing and it hasn't really gotten better. And I think expecting it to out of nowhere, maybe this is where we leave it. Like, I think expecting it to out of nowhere or just because there's talent isn't really fair. I think you need the proof of concept. And I think some of those quotes read like they think it's just going to turn on, maybe.
Right. Yeah. And Yeah, to end on a positive note, baseball, especially college baseball, baseball in general, is about getting hot at the right time.
Yep.
They could get hot down the stretch of this last month here and ride that momentum into, you know, the postseason and make a run. I mean, we saw Arkansas pretty much do that exactly last year, and then they've carried that momentum into the next season as well. But in your heart of hearts, does that feel likely at the moment, I guess, is the way to end it?
Likely, no. But if you're going to start something now, this weekend at home, another big series.
Yep. So we'll have full coverage of that series on GamecockScoop.com. Alan will be there. No women's basketball tournaments or spring football games. We're just on baseball here. We will have plenty of off-season coverage and speculation and all the fun stuff on football all throughout the summer on GamecockScoop.com. So go check us out. We'll be back here next week to talk about that Kentucky series and more. Until next time, we'll see you.